She heard the lope of an engine. Thank you, God. Oh, thank you, God. She'd lost her phone, but she knew the time was now almost 6 a.m. It had been 9 hours since she'd first found this girl in a padlocked dog kennel, reeking of urine in an unattended van. In another hour, the sun would be up. Road crews are ahead of schedule. Or they received special direction from the cops, maybe, in light of a mysterious text message concerning a similarly named rest area. Darby? Jay grabbed her wrist, her voice rising with panic. What?
I see him. He's following us.
5:44 a.m.
Darby?
Yes, Ashley Garver was following them. A ragged shadow silhouetted against the roaring blaze. Nail gun carried in his left hand now. His right was injured, clenched under his armpit. He was 50 yards behind them, a shambling figure in smoking clothes, raising his unhurt hand to wipe his mouth. He was too far away to shoot. Darby's marksmanship was too uncertain, and she couldn't waste her single bullet. So she concealed the pistol behind her waist, and at her back, the headlights intensified as the snowplow chugged closer. A murderer approaching behind them, and the assistance of a stranger ahead of them. It should have been an easy choice. Jay tugged her.
Let's go!
And in a way, she realized, it still was.
Darby, let's go! We have to run!
No.
What?
She nodded at her ankle. I'll just slow you down. You run. Alarm in Jay's eyes.
What? No!
Jay, listen to me. I have to stop him. I can't run anymore. I've been running from him all night. All freaking night. And I'm sick of it. The headlights grew brighter, cutting shafts in the smoky fog, drawing harsh shadows in the glittering snow. They burned Darby's eyes. And behind them, the shadow of Ashley Garver staggered closer, 20 paces away now, but still not close enough. She tightened her grip on the Beretta. You have to run.
No!
Run! Darby shouted, smoke in her throat. Run to those headlights and tell the driver to turn his truck around. To take you to a hospital. She pushed her forward, but Jay fought back. The girl shrieked, dug her feet in, tried to punch Darby in the shoulder. But then it all melted into a hug, a shivery, aching embrace under intensifying lights. I'll come back, Darby whispered into the girl's hair, rocking her. I'll get him, and then I will come back to you.
Promise.
I promise, Jay.
You're lying again.
I pinky swear, she said, raising her duct-taped right hand. Jay winced.
That's not funny.
Something sliced through the air above them, tugging a handful of Darby's hair. Her first thought was shrapnel, but she knew better. It was a nail, a steel projectile twirling past her scalp. Ashley was shambling closer to them, but still not close enough to risk her only bullet. Not yet. She pushed the girl away, toward the headlights. Now run! Jamie Nissen took 2 shaky steps in the snow and looked back, her eyes brimming with fiery tears.
Don't miss.
I won't, Darby said. Then she turned back to face Ashley. I won't. Ashley was perplexed to see them separate. Jaybird ran for the incoming snowplow, while Darby turned around to face him. They were now 20 paces apart. His right fist throbbed like it was full of gravel. The skin on his cheeks and forehead felt tight, tingly, like a sunburn. His lips were cracked, splitting and leaking down his chin. He reeked of burnt skin and hair. A dense and fatty odor curling off him in wisps of smoke. His North Face jacket had melted weirdly to his back, hanging off in molten strings. But hell, he was alive. No rest for the wicked, right? And he was feeling pretty goddamn wicked tonight. He'd broken a woman's neck with his bare hands, and nail-gunned an innocent man to death. It'd make for a hell of an episode of Forensic Files. To do all that, then to dive out the window of an exploding building while sustaining only second-degree burns, takes the luck of the devil. Jelly sighed up, indeed. Now he noticed that Darby was limping toward him, away from the bright lights of safety, away from any hope of escape. Toward him. He choked on a laugh that sounded like a bark. Maybe she'd gone a little crazy too, in this wild pressure cooker of a night. He couldn't blame her. He wasn't even sure he could hate her. His brain was a potent sugar rush, a cocktail of confused feelings for this tenacious bitch. But feelings aside, he still had to red card her for killing his baby brother. So he raised the cordless nailer at Darby, squinted through hot smoke, and fired again. A hollow click. What? He pulled the trigger again. Another click. To his horror, the Pazlode's battery light now blinked an urgent red. Sapped by the cold weather. It had finally happened. Oh, shit. He looked back up. Darby was still approaching, still coming at him, like his personal angel of death, limping but eerily, inhumanly calm. And he noticed something else, something carried in her swiping hand, concealed from his view behind her hip, an angular shape, half-glimpsed. Lars's Beretta. No, his mind fluttered. No, that's impossible. Jay sprinted into the headlights, arms waving. The snowplow stopped, big tires locking up, skidding sideways as the air brakes whined a shrill cry. The lights surrounded her, igniting the snow at her feet, brighter than daylight. She couldn't see anything else, just those twin suns, overpowering. She screamed, something she wouldn't remember. The engine made a chuffing sound. The cab door opened. The driver was older than her father, bearded, pot-bellied, with a Red Sox hat. He jumped out and raced to her, already out of breath, shouting something. She was winded too, and she collapsed to her knees in the ice. He reached her, a stomping black shadow in the high beams, and the truck's engine made another chuffing sound, like her aunt's German Shepherd. Then the man grabbed her shoulders, his whiskery face in hers now, Dr. Pepper on his breath, bombarding her with questions.
Are you okay?
She was too out of breath. She couldn't speak.
What happened?
Uphill, the flaming visitor center's roof caved in. A shattering wooden crash that unleashed more fireflies into the night. And he squinted up at it, then back at her, his rough hands on her cheeks.
You're safe now.
She wanted to tell him about Ashley, about Darby, about the nail gun, about the life-or-death battle happening a short distance uphill. But she had no words. She couldn't assemble any thoughts. Her mind was jelly again. She just started crying, and he took her into his arms and hugged her. And the world fell apart. He was whispering now, like a chant. You're safe, you're safe, you're safe. Darby, she wanted to say. Darby is not safe. And then she saw it. A heartbeat of red and blue illuminated the trees. Behind the snowplow, halted bumper to bumper, was a police car. In the glow of the truck's taillights, she read a banner on the side door. Highway Patrol. Ashley Garver ran like hell. Impossible. I counted the shots. The Beretta is empty. He told himself this over and over. But still, he wasn't brave enough to turn around and call Darby's bluff. Instead, he raced back to his parked Astro, where he knew he'd left a second battery rattling around inside the Pazload box. He could reload his nail gun, at least, and then decide how to handle this new development. He tripped on a snowbank, wincing for the crack of a gunshot and a bullet in the spine, but it never came. He reached the Astro, unlocked, flung the door open, scrambled inside, reaching under the passenger seat, knocking Lars's stupid plastic A-10 Warthog off the dashboard, and opened the Pazload's hard case. Two latches to unclasp with trembling fingertips. He knew he'd heard Lars fire 4 gunshots in the scuffle. He was certain of this. 1, 2, 3, 4. Plus the 5 shots he'd fired at Sandy's truck. Equaled 9. The Beretta stored 8 in the single-stacked magazine, plus 1 in the chamber. How could Darby have willed another 45 caliber cartridge into existence? The floor of the van, maybe. He recalled Lars opening the federal box upside down and dumping 50 clattering rounds to the floor. He finally hurled the case open. The lid banged against the glove box. The first battery box was empty, so he grabbed another, ripped off the tape, dumped it into his palm, opened the Pazload's trap door panel, dropped out the spent battery. He froze. He hadn't heard anything, but somehow he just knew. Something about the way the hairs on his neck lifted and prickled, like static electricity. She's behind me, right now. He turned around, slowly, slowly. And yes, there was Darby. She'd caught up to him, standing outside the Astro's ajar driver door. Beretta Cougar aimed at him in knuckled hands. He'd bought this very pistol for Lars as a gift 6 months ago, and now it was pointed at his heart. Unfreaking believable. Here she was, the girl he'd tried to suffocate with a Ziploc bag 6 hours ago, back with a furious vengeance. A 9-fingered, black-winged angel of death. She was here for him, drenched in his brother's blood, fire glowing on her sweaty skin. "What were you going to do with Jay?" she asked. "Tell me now." "What? Really?" she aimed up, from his chest to his face. "Really." "Okay." Ashley slid up into a sitting position on the passenger seat, keeping the nailer concealed behind his back. "I just... you know what? Fine. You want to know? It's nothing special. We just have an uncle up in Idaho. We call him Fat Kenny, who said he'd give me $10,000 for a healthy little white girl, plus 10%. He runs a little ring out of his storm cellar for some truckers from out of state, big guys who run long hauls, 20-hour days, away from their wives, guys with, you know, appetites. Darby didn't blink. She kept the Beretta trained on him, and that white scar coalesced on her eyebrow. Curved, like a sickle. "Yeah, it's gross, and it's not my gig, but I needed to salvage things somehow." Ashley kept talking, buying time, while his right hand quietly searched the seat for the Pazload's spare battery. Then he would load it and surprise the bitch with a 16-penny to the face. "So yes, I lied to you, Darbs, when I promised it wasn't a sex thing. It was supposed to be a simple kidnapping. But then the cops got all over Sandy, and I had to change the plan. And now it's definitely, absolutely 100,000,000% a sex thing. And I'm sorry." Behind his back, his fingertips touched the Pazload battery. Just a blind stroke. "There it is." And closed around it. "What's his name?" Darby asked. "Kenny Garver." "Where does he live?" "Rathdrum." "His address?" 912 Black Lake Road. Ashley slid the battery into the nailer, gently, so she wouldn't hear the click. He felt himself grinning, even at gunpoint. He held the nail gun behind his back, preparing to lift it and fire. "I mean, hell, you got me, Darbs. You win." I surrender.
Let's play a round of circle time while we wait for the cops to...
Let's not, Darby said, pulling the trigger. Crack. 6:01 a.m. Ashley flinched at the gunshot. He hadn't expected to be alive to hear it. You're never supposed to hear the one that gets you. But he'd heard it. And yes, he was alive. What happened? Darby hesitated outside the Astro's driver door, wobbling in shocked silence. She lowered Lars's Beretta and looked at him, her eyes pierced with vivid terror. Only then did he notice it, just below her right collarbone, on her black shirt, a spreading, slimy circle. Blood.
I said, drop it!
Movement in his side-view mirror, and Ashley turned to see a park ranger or patrolman or deputy or whatever standing behind the Astro, one hand on the taillight, catching his breath with a smoky bear hat and an aimed Glock. He shouted again.
Drop it, girl!
Darby spun to face the cop, her lips moving. She was trying to speak. Then the Beretta Cougar thumped to the snow, unfired, and her knees gave out. And just like that, resourceful, scrappy, brave Darby Thorne collapsed like a sack of trash onto a snow-covered parking lot. Ashley's jaw hung open.
No way!
No freaking way!
This is amazing! Stay down, the cop commanded, clasping his shoulder radio. Shot fired, shot fired. 10:52.
Slouching in his seat, Ashley put it all together. The police had arrived, distracted by the fire, and naturally the first thing this hick cop saw was Darby, blood-soaked and wielding a handgun, chasing a helpless victim before cornering him inside a van, a half-second from executing him.
So bargain bin Captain America here had no choice but to fire.
He had to shoot her.
That's just how it works, you know?
And it was so perfect, so stunningly perfect. The timing, the sheer misfortune.
Yes, sir, he'd always been special. Supernatural forces were at work here.
This was how a bona fide magic man eludes capture.
The cop moved in close now, gun up, kicking away the Beretta from Darby and twisting her hands behind her back to cuff them. He was rough, yanking her elbows up into chicken wings. But judging by the pint of blood steaming off the snow, she was already having brunch with the Reaper. The handcuffs opened with a metallic snick, and in the glow of the flames, Ashley could read the officer's stitched name. Corporal Ron Hill. The cop looked up.
Sir, let me see your hands.
Sure. Ashley raised the nailer.
Thwomp, thwomp.
Dawn. 6:15 a.m. Ashley Garver whistled Bing Crosby's White Christmas as he scavenged Corporal Hill's Glock 17, a bright yellow taser, and a badass friction lock baton. He flipped through the cop's billfold as well, pocketing two 20s and a 10, while noting that the guy's wife looked like a total wildebeest. The highway patrolman had squeezed off a reflexive string of gunshots as he went down, shattering the passenger window behind Ashley, punching a hole through the Astro's ceiling, and blasting a final few into the sky. One bullet might have grazed his face. He felt a stinging gash had opened up on his cheek. Or it could just be his scorched skin crackling in the alpine air. Either way, what marvelous luck! Jelly side up, indeed. Ashley decided he'd kill the snowplow driver next. That tall diesel rig was like a stopper, plugging the rest area's parking lot shut. Then he'd finesse the Astro around and get the hell out of Colorado before Corporal Hill's backup arrived. Although, hell, bring 'em on. Ashley could take them all.
He paced down the long parking lot as the Whanapani Visitor Center burned and collapsed behind him, approaching the headlights of the idling truck. The sky was turning pewter, a brightening gray as the sun readied to break over the horizon, and he checked the remaining ammo in the cop's Glock. These magazines were notched in the back with little numbers, so you can easily eyeball how many rounds you have left. He saw at least 9, plus a second full mag he'd plucked from Corporal Hill's belt. He loaded that one, just in case. Now he stood in the blinding wash of the truck's headlights, shielding his face. He concealed the Glock in his jacket pocket, where it fit comfortably. He couldn't see through the truck's windshield, too dark, but the orange driver door still hung half ajar. CDOT stenciled on the side.
"Hey!" he shouted. "It's safe!"
Silence. He licked his lips.
"Corporal Hill, he sent me down here to tell you the scene is secure, that the situation's under control. He shot the kidnapper. Now he needs you to transmit a message to the other trucks on your CB."
Another long silence. Then, finally, the door creaked and a scruffy face peered out, standing on the foot rail.
"I already called in, and they said..."
Ashley aimed the Glock. Crack. The window exploded, a near miss, but the man fell out of the cab anyway, slamming down hard on his ass in the snow. His Red Sox hat fluttered off. Ashley passed around the headlights, shielding his eyes. The driver flopped onto his belly, glass bits crunching underneath him, scrambling upright, reaching for the ajar door to hoist himself back inside. Crack! But Ashley blew a hole in his arm. The man screamed hoarsely. Ashley palmed the door shut.
"Sir, it's fine. Don't kill me."
The man crawled away sideways, on one elbow, clutching his wrist. Hot blood spurting through his fingers, blotting the snow, leaving a red trail.
"Please, God, please don't kill me."
Ashley followed him.
"I'm not going to kill you. Please, don't.
"Stop moving. It's fine. I won't kill you," Ashley said, putting his foot on the man's fleshy back to pin him.
"Stop struggling, sir. It's all A-okay, I promise."
As he said this, he nuzzled the Glock 17 into the back of the man's neck. He squeezed the trigger, but stopped. Again, he'd gotten that feeling, that odd electricity. Someone was standing behind him. What now? He turned around, half expecting to see the ragged ghost of Darby Thorne, back for bloody revenge. But the figure standing behind him was shorter, smaller. It was Jay, just harmless little Jaybird, in her red pokeball shirt, about to witness another murder. Honestly, he'd forgotten all about her. But yeah, even with Lars out of the picture, he could still deliver her to Fat Kenny, and fetch a tidy sum for as long as she lasted. She had something in her hand. At first he thought it was Sandy's pepper spray. But then the 7-year-old raised it, reflecting a glint of firelight, and Ashley realized with a jolt of terror that it was something far worse. It was Lars's Beretta. She must have picked it up from the red snow by Darby's body when he hadn't been looking. And now here it was, in Jaybird's shaky little fingers, aimed at him. Again. He groaned.
"Oh, come on!"
Crack. 6:22 a.m. Ashley Garver flinched again. And again, his eardrums rang in answer to a gunshot he'd never expected to hear. He opened his eyes. Jay was still standing there by the snowplow, her eyes wide with fear, the Beretta slide locked in her white fingers. Dirty smoke lingered, curling in the headlights, the charcoal odor of burnt powder. "She missed." He patted his stomach and chest, just to be certain.
No blood, no pressure, no pain. His torso and limbs were all fine. Yes, he realized. From 3 feet, Jaybird missed. The girl's jaw quivered. She re-aimed the semi-automatic and tried to fire again. But there was no slack to the trigger. Not even a click. The weapon was empty. Wherever Darby had managed to scrounge that miraculous extra cartridge from, it didn't matter, because it had whistled harmlessly past Ashley's ear and plunked down somewhere in the frozen furs. It was gone, their last gasp of hope spent, and Ashley was still alive. Am I immortal? It had all been so darkly hilarious. The fireball hurling him out the window with only minor burns, the cop arriving and miraculously shooting the wrong person in the nick of time. And now this? Little Jaybird had him dead to rights, point blank, and she still missed. His toast had landed jellyside up once again, against all odds. He fought back a burst of pitch-black laughter. All his life he'd been shielded, insulated from consequences by some generous, unknown force. The way he'd been born with the looks and predatory cunning Lars never had. The way his father had lost his shit to Alzheimer's, just in time to hand him the reins to Fox Contracting. Even trapped a hopeless mile into the guts of Chink's Drop, he'd been rescued by the blindest, dumbest chance. And the bones in his thumb had knitted perfectly, against the door's prediction. Yes, sir, he'd grown up to be quite a magic man indeed. And there could be no doubt, he was destined for big things. How big? Hell, maybe he'd be president someday. He couldn't resist. He laughed. But oddly, he didn't hear it. Only the tinnitus ring in his ears. Come to think of it, he wasn't even sure if his face was moving. Nice shooting, Jaybird, he tried to say. No sound. Jay lowered the Beretta. Now she appeared strangely calm, still watching him, studying him with those little blue eyes. Not with terror. No, not anymore. But curiosity instead. What the hell? Ashley tried to speak again, this time slower, his tongue carefully enunciating,
Nice shooting, Jaybird.
And he heard it come out as a single groaned syllable, slurred by Novocaine lips. It was his voice. Yes, it came from his own lungs and airway, but it was spoken by a drooling retard he didn't recognize. This was the single most terrifying sensation he'd ever felt. Then his eyes slipped out of focus. Jay blurred, then doubled. Now there were 2 Jaybirds staring back at him, and both of them set down their twin copies of the pistol that killed him. A warm wetness slithered down his face, tickling his cheek. A strange odor touched the floor of his brain, dense and sour, like burnt feathers. He was furious now, trembling with rage, and he tried to say something else, to curse at Jay, to threaten a red card, to raise the officer's sidearm and shut her up forever. But it had already fallen from his fingers. To his profound horror. He'd forgotten what it was called. He recalled something. Something like, Ock? Was it Pock? Doc? Rock in a sock? He wasn't certain of anything anymore. And words wilted and fell away like brown leaves. And he reached frantically for them, for any of them. And grasped hold of a simple one.
Help!
It came out unrecognizable. A moan. Then the world inverted, the brightening sky going under as Ashley pitched over, hitting the snow on his back. The gun was somewhere to his right, but he was too mushy to reach for it. He wasn't even aware he'd landed, because in his fragmenting thoughts,
Ashley Garver was still airborne, still helpless, still falling, falling, falling.
Darby, it's over.
She was falling too, when she heard the girl's voice and it caught her, held her to the world like a thin tether. She opened her crusty eyes and saw the shadow of Jay hunched against a vast gray sky.
Darby, it's done. I picked up your gun, and Ashley was about to kill someone else, so I shot him.
She forced her dry lips to move.
Good job.
In the face.
Excellent. You got shot too, Darby.
Yeah, I noticed.
Are you okay?
Not really. Jaybird leaned in and hugged her, her hair tickling Darby's face. She tried to breathe, but her ribs felt strangely tight, like someone was standing on her chest, collapsing her lungs. Inhale, her mother told her. Okay. Then count to five. Exhale.
Darby?
The girl shook her.
Stop!
Yeah, I'm here.
You were closing your eyes.
It's fine.
No, promise me. Promise that you won't close your eyes.
All right. She lifted her duct-taped right hand. I pinky swear.
Still not funny. Please, Darby.
She was trying, but she still felt her eyelids drooping, an inevitable tug into darkness. Jay, tell me, what was the name of your favorite dinosaur?
I told you already.
Again, please.
Why?
I just want to hear it. She hesitated.
Ystrepta spondylus.
That's... Darby laughed weakly. That's such a stupid dinosaur, Jay. The girl smiled through tears.
You couldn't spell it anyway.
Somehow, this patch of lumpy ice felt more comfortable than any feather bed she'd ever lain in. Every bruised inch of her body felt perfectly at rest here, like settling into a well-earned sleep. And again, she felt her eyelids slipping shut. No pain in her chest anymore. Just a dull, increasing pressure. Jay whispered something.
What'd you say? I said thank you.
This gave Darby a little chill, and her stomach fluttered with emotions she couldn't articulate. She wasn't sure what to say to Jay, how to answer that. You're welcome? All she knew was that if she were given the choice, she'd do it all over again. Every minute of tonight. All of the pain. Every sacrifice. Because if saving a 7-year-old girl from child predators isn't worth dying for, what the hell is? And now, bleeding out into the snow, watching the state-funded Wanapani Visitor Center burn and collapse into a black skeleton, Darby collapsed too, into a deep and satisfying peace. She was so close now, so achingly close. She just had one last thing to do, quickly, before she lost consciousness.
Jay, one last favor. Reach into my right pocket, please. There should be a blue pen.
A pause.
Okay.
Put it in my left hand.
Why?
Just do it, please. And then I need you to go back to the snowplow. Tell the driver to turn it around and drive you to a hospital right now. Tell him it's an emergency. That you need steroids before you have a seizure.
Are you going to come with us?
No. I'm going to stay right here. I need to sleep.
Please, come with us.
I can't. Darby's tether had snapped, and she was falling again, dropping through floors of darkness, sliding into the back of her own head. Back in Provo now. Back in her old childhood house with bad pipes and the popcorn ceiling. wrapped in her mother's arms. The nightmare dispelling. Her mother's warm voice in her ear. See, you're fine, Darby. It was just a bad dream. And it's all over now.
Please,
Jay whispered, far away.
Please come with me.
Inhale, count to five, exhale. Okay, just like that. Keep doing that. In her darkening thoughts, she remembered Ashley's final words to her, and she pulled up her right sleeve, uncapped that pen, and wrote left-handed on her own wrist, scratchy, half-inked, all caps on her bare skin. Kenny Garver, Rathdrum, Idaho, 912 Black Lake Road. Now it was all really, truly done. Now Jay was saved, and every last angle of Ashley's disgusting plan has been expunged, dragged into the daylight for judgment. She let the pen slide between her fingers, finally satisfied. When the cops discovered her body, frozen here in the snow, they'd read her final message. They'd know they had one last door to kick down, all the way up in Idaho. I've got you, Darby. Okay. Don't be afraid. The long-legged ghost wasn't real. Now her mother squeezed her tighter, impossibly tight, binding her in this perfect moment. And the terror was finally over. It was just a nightmare, and it's all finished now. You're going to be okay. And Darby? Yeah? I'm so proud of you.
Draft email. Unsent. 12/24/17, 5:31 p.m. To amagicman13@gmail.com. From fatkenny1964@outlook.com. Sorry for the delay, Ashley. We got our own snowmageddon going on up here, too. The neighbor's barn finally caved in, and the horses are going apeshit. You won't even recognize the place. But yeah, you wanted it in writing, and you bet. Let's do this thing. 10K up front, plus 10% of everything I pull after. It's been a while since we've done one of these, but I've got the bunker ready, and two interested fellas already. One from Milwaukee, one from Portland. Those meds you're getting will make her better, right? At least for a while? Sick is okay. Barfing is not okay. Hope you did a clean job on the school bus, lady. You should be in Bozeman by now, so be here the day after Xmas, then? Stay safe. Keep Lars's nose clean. And keep off the big roads. Talk soon. I've got someone knocking at the front door.
Epilogue. February 8th, Provo, Utah. Jay didn't realize Darby's last name was spelled with a silent E until she saw it milled into a cement gravestone. Below it, the date of death. December 24th. One day before Christmas. 7 days before New Year's. 46 days ago. She was here with her parents in Darby's hometown, on a cemetery hillside, still scaled with thawing snow, because her father had insisted on making the trip. Originally, he'd wanted to fly here much earlier in January, but Jay's adrenal condition had flared up with two seizures that left her bedridden and under watch. Finally, she'd been deemed healthy enough for travel last week. All the while, her father had insisted. We have to see Darby Thorne again. We owe her something that can't be written on a check. That's the one? He asked now, a few steps downhill, catching up.
Yeah.
The hours and days after the incident on the Colorado Highway were a sickly blur. But little moments snagged in Jay's memory. The ache of the IV needle,
the roar of the rotor blades, the way the medics had circled and applauded when they carried her onto the helipad of St. Joseph, the strange blur of the drugs, the way her mother and father came racing down that corridor in dreamy slow motion, their fingers interlocked, holding hands in a way she'd never seen them before, speaking in choked voices she'd never heard, the three-way hug atop her creaking bed, the taste of salty tears. The cameras, too, the fuzzy microphones, the investigators clutching their notepads and tablets, trading gentle questions and sideways glances. The phone interviews with journalists whose accents she could barely understand. The news truck parked outside with an antenna that looked like a ship's mast. The reverent, almost fearful way people hush their voices when speaking about the dead. Like poor Edward Schaefer and Corporal Ron Hill, the highway patrolman who made a tragic split-second error that cost him his life. And Darby Thorne, the one who started it all. The restless, bleary-eyed art student from an obscure state college in Boulder, racing a beater Honda Civic across the Rockies, who'd first stumbled across a child locked in a stranger's van and took heroic action to save her. And against all odds, succeeded. Darby came to that rest stop for a reason, Jay's mother had said back at St. Joseph. Sometimes God puts people exactly where they need to be, even when they don't know it. A gust slipped through the cemetery, breathing among the taller gravestones, making Jay shiver. And now her mother caught up to the group, flipping up her sunglasses to read the letters as they coalesced on paper, clearer with every stroke of black crayon. She had a pretty name.
Yeah, she did.
Sunlight pierced the clouds, and for a few seconds, Jay felt warmth on her skin. A curtain of light swept over the graves, shimmering over granite and frozen grass blades. Then it was gone, snuffed by a biting cold, and Jay's father slipped his hands into his coat pockets. For a long moment, the three of them were silent, listening to the last scratchy rubs of crayon as the headstone transferred to paper. "Take as long as you need," he said. But the etching was finished already. The scotch tape peeled off the stone, one corner at a time. Then the paper moved away, exposing the engraved letters, "Maya Belange Thorne."
"What did you mean," Jay asked, "when I asked you if you loved each other, and you just said, 'It's complicated'?"
Darby rolled the rice paper up into a cardboard tube and stood up from her mother's grave, squeezing Jay's shoulder. "It's all right," she said. "I was wrong." The end. We hope you have enjoyed our presentation of No Exit by Taylor Adams, performed by Sarah Naughton. Performance copyright 2017 by Brilliance Publishing, Inc. All rights reserved. For further information concerning this program or other Brilliance audio titles, please call the following toll-free number, 1-800-222-3225. Or visit our website at www.brilliancaudio.com. No part of this recording may be played for an audience or reproduced in any form. It may not be streamed, downloaded, broadcast, or copied without written permission. Address all inquiries to Brilliance Audio, P.O. Box 887, Grand Haven, Michigan 49417.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.